Winches and scallywags, rugrats over 18 years of age, prudes, avert your ears and eyes. The Asylum Studio brings to you a show to bend your mind and implode your morals. Ethics be damned. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Chaos and Disorder.
I got a funny feeling that you might even have heard the intro this week through a microphone with intro music. I hope. You never know. One show after a suspension, he just dropped the ball again. But welcome to Chaos and Disorder. That's exactly what you get, especially with a drunken, bearded ne'er-do-well as a producer. I'm doing the air quotes thing. Check out everything we got to offer over at Chaos and Disorder on Twitter, Chaos and Disorder Pod on Facebook, and something about a Gmail, asylumfantasysports.com for the archives.
It is Chaos and Disorder Pod at gmail.com.
Do we ever get emails on
Tons
Chaos and Disorder Pod
Tons
at gmail.com?
They say, why does Rick Flieger always forget the Gmail account, which we so diligently write to?
Do they feel by me?
Pardon me?
Do they feel slighted by me that I disrespect the mailbox?
I think they used to. Now it's just more or less they think you're a boob and just forget about it.
Well, if that's how you're communicating with the masses, then that's why they feel that way, because all you do is besmirch my good name any chance you get.
I don't have to say anything. So you do it yourself right on these airways here.
I don't think so.
You
it's
do.
Just, it's your email box. I want to give you the shine. That's what
Wait
we
a minute.
Do.
It is Chaos and Disorder Pod at gmail.com.
Right.
Aren't you part of this podcast?
Yeah. Kinda. I mean, I'm the talent. I can't be bothered with such things as talking to these mouth breathers and communicating with them or any of the administrative
they just
stuff.
Figure you're a boob.
I don't think that's what they think. I think they understand.
Well, I'm putting it mildly.
You're the approachable one. You're the Twitter
troll.
I am troll
the sweet one.
And that's your thing. I'm more the talent. You can't get at the talent, you know what I mean? So it makes sense. Thank Andy
I would if you quit patting yourself on the back. There you go. Don't give yourself a cramp. Thank you to Andy Frampton. You can find him at Bronco Swanson on Facebook and the old TikToker. And, of course, at Real Rival Lovers for the great music. Find them on Bandcamp and on YouTube and Twitter at Real Rival Lovers.
Well, they're everywhere. You still
betcha.
Big into the Bandcamp now? Is that still a thing for you?
It's always a thing for me.
Always been.
I'm Mr. Loyal.
Loyal to Bandcamp.
Loyal to whatever I like.
See, this is why we never hear you. So you deny it, and you're sitting here going like this.
I listen to the shows. You don't.
I don't. This
and I
awful.
Never have a hard time hearing my golden pipes.
Off the
shakes
top of
over
the
there.
We're still in the family hour. There could be children's listening, so I'll leave that joke in the holster. Remind me later, though. Maybe I'll throw it back out there.
Nobody wants to hear it.
So,
anyway.
Rick, I'm given to understand there was a golf tournament last weekend, and some people were rather excited about it.
So I hear. Yes, it was the second major of the year, the PGA Championship. And we'll have a story.
Our
favorite journalist coming up in a little bit. But Phil Mickelson set the record at the age of 50 and some odd months, whatever it is. But he's 50 years old, and he won the PGA Championship. And quite frankly, you don't think, especially from that era, you always say, well, it was Tiger and Phil, but it was always kind of like Tiger.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But, I tell you what, to his credit, Phil Mickelson joins the great Lee Trevino and Nick Faldo with six major titles, which that ties him at 12th place in overall all-time major championship. So this guy's right up there. I mean, he's won three Masters, one British Open, and two PGAs now.
Can't get that U.S. Open, though.
Has not got the U.S. Open yet. As a matter of fact, that you brought that up, there are five players all time that have won the Slam. You know, all four majors.
The career Slam.
Career, yes.
Okay.
Can you name them?
Oh, it's got to be Tiger.
Yes.
It's got to be Arnie.
No.
No?
No.
All right, so Tiger, Jack.
Yep. Feel free to chime in there, Alejandro.
Tiger, Jack, who won all four. Watson.
No.
Trevino.
No. Trevino never won the Masters.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
And Tom Watson never won the PGA, which is Arnold Palmer never won the PGA.
No kid.
Yep.
I give up.
Of course, Jack, Tiger, Ben Hogan.
Oh, well, yeah.
Two Masters, four Opens, one British Open, and two PGAs. Gary Player, three Masters, one Open, three British Opens, two PGAs. And Gene Sarazen, the old Squire, one Masters, two U.S. Opens, one British Open, and three PGAs.
I don't think Phil's gonna get a U.S. Open. I mean, this was
I don't either.
This was like the kind of the one shot deal. Because I got to tell you, when he raced up into the lead on Friday, I remember thinking, "Cool story. That's nice. He'll finish T45." You know what I mean?
And right.
The fact that he kept this going, it really was a cool story. I don't know if it says more about kind of the legion of younger golfers we have now, that we're so enthralled when an old timer like Phil pops up and does this and it becomes a national story, or it's just on its own because it's Phil Mickelson, why it was so interesting. But and we'll get to Kyle Porter soon, why this is being treated like a seminal moment in U.S. history.
Well, I mean, in his defense, I mean, if you look back, you don't remember the 86 Masters, but certainly Tiger Woods is, what was it, 2019 Masters. Granted, it was a Masters, so it's that much more special. But, you know, those two guys at their age, you know, through the adversity that they had winning those majors. Yeah, I mean, I can see why they were rather thrilled with it. I mean, you know, he's 50 years old. I mean, it just doesn't happen. And no matter how much better condition these guys are, and I was actually amazed at his body transformation, frankly.
He doesn't look like the same guy whatsoever.
And so, I mean, as far as that goes, I didn't mind that part. What really bothers me is the crowd itself. Whereas, you know, even from 300 yards away, you know, in the hole, you the man. Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, you know, it's not, you know, cheer on a great shot. But, I mean, he could have shanked it in the hole.
Well, that's just a thing now. It's adults trying to get their voice on CBS.
Exactly.
That's all it really is. That's a couple things that stuck out to me from this. And the first one was the crowd, especially at the end, you know, coming down 18. There must have been, it looked like there were 70,000 people coming down there. And I think that block of wood, Koepka actually bitched about that at some point.
Oh, I have that story here as well.
Then we'll save it for that. But I remember afterwards thinking about how happy I was. It didn't dawn on me the size of the crowd and the amount of people together, and that maybe all this nonsense and craziness is over. It didn't even dawn on me in the moment, and it was cool. I remember when things first started, you know, they'd let 10,000 people, and I think, man, it's so weird to have people back in the building or people back on the course, and this time it didn't even click with me. But I got to tell you, that course, the USGA needs to pay attention. Look,
right.
I get they have natural advantages being out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean in terms of making it a challenge, but that thing was beautiful, number one.
Yeah.
It was so punitive. You had to shape your shots. You had to play the right way. But it was in no way did it feel like it was tricked up at all. They just went out. It was a good hard course, a good hard layout, and created a major where without the course being tricked up, without any crazy weather or anything, the winner was at -6 and kind of ran away with it almost at -6. That's how we'll get into, and when we get to U.S. Open week, I'll bitch incessantly about how they tricked the course up. That course, I'd never, to my memory, watched a tournament there before. Wow, it was great to look at. Nothing was a given. Nothing was a guarantee. These guys struggled on it, but it was fair. If you hit you know, fairways. If you hit greens, you could score. What a great place to hold a major.
And courses like that are, just like you said, they are so fair because it could be maybe 3 under to 13 under at any given week could be the winning score. But that's all reasonable stuff.
Right.
There's nobody 26 under. There's nobody 8 over leading and so forth. I can remember Wingfoot way back. I think Hale Irwin won it. He was like 6 or 7 over par, I mean, for 72 holes. I mean, these guys are better than that. And some of these other courses where they shoot 30 under, they're not that good. I mean, the course just isn't just, you know, I'm with you. I mean, it was just perfect as far as that goes.
Yeah, I mean, I'll save this complaint until we get to the Open. What I can't stand is seeing a guy hit a perfect shot and watching it roll off the green and 75 yards back up the fairway. I don't need that nonsense.
No.
If you hit it right, I want you to be punished reasonably. Yeah, you know, for a bad shot, and you see this, there's little pockets of water everywhere. There was hazards kind of everywhere. I forget which hole it is. It had just like that weird tree and all that scrub around it, and every one of these guys ended up in it every single time. I really, really enjoyed watching this golf
tournament. I did too.
Irregardless of the Mickelson story. But it was an awesome story.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
No, that was it.
Oh, one thing, I was at the beginning of the tournament, I believe it was Thursday, I'm like, oh, my God, Phil. I mean, they had the story where he had, I don't know if it's CBS, but it must be CBS, it has it, these drones that now hover over the golf courses, and they have cameras, and they give different angles of the shots.
Right.
And he's on, like, I don't know, 4 or 5, I think it was the first round, and he stops. He has to have the drone moved.
Oh, really?
It's like 150 feet above ground. He's not over the green. He's not going to hit. If he does, that shot was going to go 200 yards over the green anyway. But no, he asked like twice or three times, you know, I'm going to hit it, move it. And he made them move a drone. And I'm sitting there reading this on Thursday like, oh, I hope you shoot 10 over. And then it turns into a cool story, and I felt myself rooting for the guy.
Well, that's what happened. You're basically clay. You can be molded any direction.
Insane Phil Mickelson crowd frustrates Brooks Koepka.
It should say block quote, of wood.
Yeah, quote, no one really gave a, and I'll fill in the words, gave a shit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he was complaining. I don't know. Did you read the story?
No. I heard that he was complaining, but I didn't follow up on it. Shocker.
I'm just trying to see if this is from our favorite writer, too. It's not. This is from the New York Post.
Well, a periodical of note. Yeah.
Brooks Koepka had already lost a golf tournament. Now he was trying to protect his surgically repaired knee.
Was he afraid of a swarm?
As mayhem ensued on the 72nd hole, with security losing control of the masses as thousands of spectators stormed the 18th fairway, celebrating Phil Mickelson's historic victory. Koepka was lost in the mob along with his caddy, Ricky Elliott, for several moments before finally breaking out of the pack to safety. Quote, it would have been cool if I didn't have a knee injury and got dinged a few times in the knee in that crowd because no one really gave a shit, Koepka said afterward.
Wait, is he implying people were kicking him in the knee? What's he talking about?
Well, they just didn't care about him.
Oh,
I'm Brooks Koepka, and you don't care about me. Yes, it's cool for Phil, but getting dinged a few times isn't exactly my idea of fun. I was trying to protect my knee. Why didn't you just walk off the green and let them follow Phil and let him have his moment instead of you trying to hog your way through and protecting your knee? He is. He's a block of wood. I can't stand him.
Did you see that video that came out? I saw it today. I don't know when it came out, where they were doing a pre-taped stand-up interview with him, and DeChambeau, his boy, don't do it, came walking behind him, and just the clicking of his spikes irritated Brooks to where he's cussing and carrying
on. That guy is a jackass.
He's a weird dude, is what he is. So he's all that, and he's all fussy, and then he'll be taking thong pictures on a yacht with that fiance or girlfriend he won't acknowledge or talk to in public.
Yeah, because he's on the golf course.
It did make me kind of happy to just watch him completely chop it up on Sunday, because it looked like, you know, coming in with the injury, you know, you weren't even certain he was going to be able to finish, and then he's in there and he's in the lead, what, on number two, and then he just started chopping it up all over, and he apparently was kind of salty about it. I guess he's not used to close calls and not winning in a major, but
yeah, and that was another thing. You know, not long ago we're talking about him as a machine, you know, unfallible, and he couldn't even keep a thought together because DeChambeau walked behind him in spikes.
Yeah.
I mean, what, your concentration is that bad because your knee got dinged or what?
Well,
I don't know.
It could have been the dinged knee. Yeah, I wasn't aware of the dinged knee.
Spare me, Brooks. Yeah, why don't you call up Kyle Porter and get an article written about you?
About his knee, the heroic effort of his dinged knee.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, it seemed like his knee bugged him. He couldn't even, like, hunker down to read his putts. It kind of looked like he looked like you staggering around out there after about 47 of those pale ales you got going on over there.
Don't drink pale ale.
Why not?
Too many hops. Don't like it.
I thought you were a hop head.
No, that's him.
I'm a hop head. I like the hops.
Well, how come you don't drink any beer with hops in it?
You know what I wonder?
No, answer my question.
I thought all beer had hops in it.
Well, your water light doesn't really have a lot.
I like the Coors hops. Those are the best ones. They're delicious.
What, that one leaf in 5 gallons?
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a great leaf.
So here's what I wonder, completely off subject, but since we're talking about the hop head over here. I have a theory with hipsters and anything they're into like this guy, and he's a beer hipster. You know what I mean? Do you think he even likes 75% of this shit he drinks, or does he just like to tell people he likes it because nobody else likes it?
I believe he...
I guess I could ask him. We're talking about him like he's not in the room.
I believe he enjoys trying. Yeah. Well, no,
okay, you can enjoy trying.
He enjoys trying many various types. How many he likes... I mean, I guess that's up to speculation. I'm sure there's probably some that he thoroughly enjoys, some he thinks are pretty good, others not too bad, that kind of thing. Am I correct?
Spot on.
Here's my theory. Ooh, what was that?
I don't know.
Oh, did we get an email? Yes. What's the email again?
That is our email.
That is
chaos and disorder. I told you. See, that's just the way
they're rolling in during the show. And
yeah, they don't.
Mouth breathers, quit interrupting us. You threw me off. I was trying to make a point.
Yeah, really. We're not used to during the show.
Good God, what are we doing here? I think, gun to his head, didn't have to answer to anyone, Alejandro Finkelstein and Rick Briggs would rather drink a cool, crisp Miller Coors product than this stuff that tastes like turpentine and goes down like pine needles. But you like to look down your noses at the normies like me who drink that stuff, and so you lie. That's a theory I have.
That is like the most out-of-left-field inaccurate theory I've ever heard. How about you?
I concur.
He gets it.
So, I will not drink Budweiser.
Because you won't say you drink Budweiser.
No, if that's the only thing being served, I'll drink water. I will partake in a nice Coors Light.
Well, who wouldn't? It's delicious. Crisp and refreshing.
That's what my grandfather drank all the time, so I can't knock that. Coors Original, the banquet beer.
Yes.
Well, only because Sam Elliott calls it the banquet beer.
You got to drink what Sam drinks. And
Sam probably doesn't drink it.
No, I bet
he's probably
does.
Drinking 100-year-old bourbon
probably.
Scotch.
But I'll partake in a Miller Lite, and I will feel like trash the next day, but I'll do it.
See, it's better.
No.
I'll feel like trash.
It just goes to show you that he is an alcoholic, where I am a beer connoisseur.
No. You... He doesn't get a yay on that.
Obviously,
he just claimed he is not an alcoholic. Look at him. He's waving his empty beer around. And that happens to be a mass-produced beer you're drinking, unless you're going to perpetuate this snobbery.
Did you know?
Oh, we're just moving on.
Did you know? Because we have to get to this.
Oh, okay.
I mean, thanks to you. You found it. I'm giving you all the credit in the world.
As you should. Not only am I the talent, I'm the producer. I'm the glue that holds this whole shit together.
Normally, I get all the Kyle Porter. What do they win? Peabody Awards? Is that what they win for that kind
Pulitzers.
Of writing? Pulitzers?
Well, maybe they get a Peabody, too.
Yeah, I'm not
I
sure.
Know.
One of those kind of. I'm sure he wins them all. I'm not sure which one.
He ought to. He's a wordsmith, that's for certain.
But did you know, Mr. Flieger, golf is the loneliest sport on earth?
I was not aware. I've usually played in foursomes, and so there's at least three donkey dicks around.
Yeah, drinking Coors Light or whatever swill you might
be having.
Crisp,
refreshing. Maybe a Miller High Life.
You know one thing that I do miss, all serious aside. I can remember back in, it must have been about the late 70s. The golf course that I played, they had they used to have the vending machines on,
right.
Periodically throughout the golf course. And they sold, obviously it was pop, soda and stuff, but they had, back in the late 70s, it was carbonated Gatorade.
Carbonated
yes.
Gatorade?
Yes. And you pop it, pop just like a Coke can or whatever, and it was bubbly, kind of like, club soda.
Was it actually Gatorade?
Yeah, it was
or you're
Gatorade.
Saying, really?
Yeah. And it was actually very, very good. And, man, I drank a ton of those playing golf in the summertime after a hangover. You can bet on that, but...
Well, every day, everything you did in the 70s was after a hangover.
Do you remember All Sport?
Yeah.
That was my favorite carbonated, Gatorade thing.
I don't think
I never knew All Sport was carbonated.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
I don't remember.
I don't remember that either.
Powerade wasn't All Sport was.
Yeah, Powerade was just like the Broke Dick Gatorade is all it
yeah,
was.
It really was, yeah.
Might be a show title, Broke Dick Gatorade. That would be copyright infringement. It would ruin any chance we had of getting that big Gatorade sponsorship we've been looking for.
Well, we certainly wouldn't get Powerade.
that's true.
But anyway.
Oh, yeah, back to Mr. Porter.
Yes, golf is, this is by the, multi-award-winning Kyle Porter. Golf is the loneliest sport on earth. Exposure at the highest level is emotionally equivalent to a climber free soloing a piece of slab, or whatever the hell that is.
What does that even mean?
That takes your breath away. A place like the ocean course at Kiawah Island exacerbates this feeling because the entire sports world is watching you try and juggle your anger, pride, and patience when the strip of land that stretches out to the Atlantic Ocean, which Pete Dye said would have begged for the opportunity to build upon, is doing its best to rip them from your soul. That's only the first paragraph.
Yeah, we're off to a good start. Real quick, apropos of the Peabody Award, I just want to point this out because Kyle will probably get it, but I think we could be up for it as well. Each year, 30 Peabody Awards are given for entertainment, documentary, news, podcast, and radio, children, youth, and public service programming.
Well,
I want my Peabody, damn it.
If we're not even nominated, I'm really going to be pissed.
Yes, yes.
You know.
Finkelstein, get on that. Grease whatever wheels you have.
Whatever
to.
You got to do to get nominated, I want nominated.
Even
I'll
if it
lose
means drink-
to Chris Mascaro, but that's it.
Yeah,
right?
Even if
he's a good guy.
Even if it means drinking a Budweiser, get this thing done.
Okay.
And if you don't like a Bud Light, I don't know what's wrong.
Or a Yingling, which gives you a headache.
Bud Light Platinum. Have you had that one? Delicious.
Anyway.
In a fancy purple bottle, I feel like a millionaire.
Somehow, Phil Mickelson won the 2021 PGA Championship on Sunday under these arduous conditions.
Arduous, you say?
He warded off the cold, dark night. The cold, dark night that comes for every athlete that has ever lived. And he engendered a goosebump-inducing call from Jim Nance at the end. Quote, Phil defeats Father Time.
You've been in the cold, dark night for 35 years.
It felt as surreal as an ending to a golf tournament has ever felt. He probably forgot Tiger Woods in 19.
Just like a year and a half ago.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Mickelson's name belies the inconceivability of this scenario. He closed out the last event he played, the Wells Fargo Championship, 2 weeks ago with a 75-76-76 as Rory McIlroy baptized him by 17, even though Lefty led the tournament after round one. Well, that's what a 75 and 276s will do there, Kyle. You know, that's why they play four. Okay. Mickelson had only posted one top 10 finish in a major since nearly winning the 2016 Open Championship. He'd fallen outside the top 100 in the world. He is 50 years old and just 3 weeks away from 51. Okay. That wasn't too sensational.
No.
Facts.
No. He took a little break with facts in the middle, from what I recall.
Yeah. But then.
Ooh. Bum, bum, bum. I stole that from Finkelstein.
Well, thanks. Personalities aside, it made logical sense. Koepka acquiring his fifth over Mickelson would have been a top 50, top 75, or maybe top 100 major win ever. Think about that sentence. Does that really even make any sense?
That seems a pretty broad range.
Koepka acquiring his fifth over Mickelson would have been a top 50, top 75, or maybe top 100 major win ever.
Seems like you'd go the other direction if you were going to do that, weren't you?
Yeah, I don't know.
You cancel that Peabody and send it to your boys.
Yeah, we're getting it done. Anyway, Mickelson with his sixth, winning his sixth at 50 years, 11 months, and 7 days old, with his game in this shape, he's 143rd in strokes gained over the last 6 months, according to Data Golf.
What are we looking at? He just distracted us.
I know. That's what he does. Instead of operating a proper show.
Who's that young lady? Is that what you're showing me?
Nope.
Oh.
I'm trying to submit our entry for a Peabody.
There you go.
And it won't let us.
Oh, it won't let us.
Why not? That's just not right.
Just shut us down. Oh, hold on. Oh,
just open another one.
I guess the Peabody committee is listening and not impressed to this point.
It could be. Or maybe Kyle's already got a locked out.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
If you're not Kyle Porter, no need to enter here.
I don't know. We'll have to get on that.
I'll try it from a different computer so it throws them off.
And then it happened.
Oh, it happened. Oh, boy.
It did not happen linearly. For the only thing Mickelson does linearly, he loves that word,
I think
is
it's
fly
linearly.
In his pro. Huh?
Linearly.
Linearly. Yes. Thank you.
Indeed.
Literally.
Not literally. Literally.
The only thing Mickelson. Okay, wait a minute. The only thing Mickelson does
linearly
is fly his private jet from one tournament to the next.
Oh, a little shot at him.
Yeah. It happened as Mickelson's career has happened with supreme highs and inconceivable lows.
Inconceivable lows? He's a billionaire. Well, I guess he had that whole stock thing. Maybe that's an inconceivable low. But he wriggled out of it.
Yeah.
I'm given to understand the first story I read on the tweeters after he holed out the putt on 18 was that was white privilege that he was able to have this moment when he should have been in jail for the stock thing. But we won't go down that road.
Net worth.
Yeah, and
I'm
not going to read Kyle's continuing babble through the entire round.
Oh, does he give you like a stroke
it just
by
goes
stroke break?
Shot
down?
By shot, and it's just like it's just horrible. But after a year of ducking public appearances and holing up in our homes and vowing to kill a virus that rolled uninvited into the lives of so many hundreds of thousands of people, we have a new appreciation for those around us. And that's what came to mind as Lefty walked toward golf history. That's not what came to mind at all.
Yeah, I didn't think of
I didn't
the
think
bid.
Anything about any type of people whatsoever other than, hey, that's cool, Phil won.
And give me a beer. Billy!
Actually, I didn't even do that. I was working on my porch. So I was just kind of back and forth.
What were you doing on your porch?
Oh, replacing the, you know how those old, you know, the type of house I live in, the front porches, they have that lattice work
yeah.
around the bottom. I was replacing all that.
No, I figured you'd had people for that. A man of your stature.
I'm in my prime. I do this shit myself.
No, you don't. Well, you do, but you shouldn't.
You're in your prime?
Why are you just staring at him? What's he supposed to say? I'm confused.
He's supposed to jump to my defense.
What, are you begging for yays? Is that,
no!
is that what happened in here? I did see him push the button and nothing happened, yeah, well, so that's the universe saying, nah, that's bullshit. Yeah.
So I learned that I need to mute the computer at all times so that our inbox being flooded doesn't interrupt
the
show.
You know, chaos. I tell you what, if you can get on that other computer and get that thing through the Peabody, we'll be getting emails, I mean, like
oh,
that.
God. Just
I
mean, like endorsement God. Deals.
Yeah. Who's got the like the late shows now? You know, remember Johnny Carson and Jay Leno, all that. Who has them now? I don't even know.
Oh, who's the goofy guy with the song parodies? He's in Johnny's spot from Saturday Night Live.
Was that Kimmel?
No,
he was on Saturday Night Live.
The guy who does the Tonight Show now, I think.
Oh! I was thinking somebody else.
Kimmel. No, we just said, no. You got Kimmel in my head now. I can
Toronto.
See, I can see the guy's dumb
I
head.
I can't do it.
Fallon, Jimmy.
Yeah,
Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon.
See, they're both
yeah.
Jimmy. It's the same thing.
Right,
Jimmy's
yeah.
everywhere.
Yeah, Jimmy. Jimmy crack corn.
Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, Seth Meyers, and James Corden.
Jimmy Fallon did. It was a, I mean, just such a great parody. Of the Doors singing Reading Rainbow.
I might watch that.
It is spot on. And it is, I mean, it's hysterical. I mean, it's just like Morrison on the old Ed Sullivan thing with the leather jacket. And he's the wire, the microphone going over his shoulder. And he's got the rest of the Doors. They're just spot on. And the lyrics are just like so hysterical. The Reading Rainbow. You have to look that up.
Yeah, I think I might have to look that up. So are we done with old Kyle Porter?
I'm done with Kyle tonight.
We've had a hard time staying on focus, on task here.
Well, you know, it's just that these dreams of Peabody Awards.
Yeah.
You know.
It's taken over my mind. I want a Peabody Award.
Yes, I got to get a Peabody.
Is there a cash prize involved?
Oh.
It doesn't matter. If you win a Peabody, you'll be rich.
It's the prestige of it.
Yeah. I'd still like cash.
Cash is good.
I like money. Should we take a commercial?
Yes, we should.
Seems like a good time.
Because we've got some NHL to cover. We've got Dead Body Story to cover.
Another one.
Yes,
boy, they're dropping like flies out there. So.
And, I mean, it's going to be a great rest of the show.
All right, well, let's take a break. Let's sell a little coffee, and we'll come back with all that and more right after this.
Let's talk about our sponsor, Dead Sled Coffee. Dead Sled Coffee strives to create a culture of acceptance and respect no matter what your level of coffee knowledge is. They are distinguished coffee for the exceptional and unconventional. They offer amazing products that do not require your dictionary or your atlas to appreciate. Feel comfortable ordering their coffee and know that it is not a crime if you do not know where the beans came from or where it was processed. They have done all the work for you, having slurped and sniffed through endless cuppings. So you can just sit back and enjoy your coffee experience. Not sure what to try? Well, try some of their new signature blends, the Robert England blend, the Kiss blend, and the Cypress Hill blend. Go to deadsledcoffee.com. Use the promo code DEADSLED15 and take 15% off your order. deadsledcoffee.com. And hey, tell them Fligger and Briggs sent you.
Dead Sled Coffee, a distinguished coffee brand from a Peabody Award-winning podcast.
I'm going to tell you something right now. I haven't tried the Robert England blend, but that morning blend, wow, awesome.
Now, would that imply there's an afternoon blend?
Morning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G.
Oh, like Alonzo.
Yeah, something like that.
Well played.
I thought they're usually linked to a celebrity. Is there another mourning I'm unaware of?
Well, mourning as in somebody died.
Yeah.
You know.
That doesn't seem like a very chipper coffee.
It's
I'm sure it's delicious.
But... It's a great coffee. And tell you what, it's like, you know, it's such a smooth I don't know how to put it. It's just smooth. It's just, and it's just wonderful. Wakes me up. I'm not sad, even though they call it morning.
Yeah, I mean, I would think it would, if it's not in any way associated with Alonzo, I just hope it doesn't depress you at all.
No.
Next week, I'll have a review of El Diablo Blend.
El Diablo.
Ooh, there we go. Anyway, have you been watching much of the hockey playoffs?
I have.
I have, too, and they are, you know, I'm a little disappointed in the way the Penguins are playing, being a Pittsburgh guy. They're down 3-2, but I tell you what, the playoffs in general, listen to this, if you haven't really seen it much. Now, the Leafs and the Canadiens, they've only played 3 games so far, so that's no big deal. And the Avalanche and the Blues, it was a sweep, pretty easy time for the Avalanche. But here we go. The Golden Knights and the Wild, it's 3-2. They've had one overtime game, okay? The Jets swept the Oilers 4-0, but there were 3 overtime games.
Yeah, every one of those games was great.
Yeah.
Individually, the games.
It really was. Florida and Tampa. Tampa leads 3-2. They've had an overtime game.
And that's the best series. Those two teams hate each other.
Oh, yeah.
Like, legit hate each other. Not the fake hugging. Somebody might get decapitated before this thing's over. I have never seen a series. Well, I'm sure I have, but I can't remember a more hateful series.
And another one that's getting nasty is Carolina and Nashville.
Right,
It's 2-2 now. They've had 2 overtimes in a row, 2 double overtimes in a row that the Preds have won. And the Hurricanes, I heard a weird stat on them. They are like 1-11 or 2-11, I forget the exact thing, in overtime. So, I mean, you know, if you're a Preds fan, take them to overtime. You got them.
Yeah, keep going to OT. Yeah, that's been a great series, too.
Boston beat the Caps 4-1, 3 overtime games.
Yeah.
And now the Penguins and the Islanders, they've played 5 games. It's 3-2 Islanders, 2 overtime games. This series, I mean, it is you can say whatever you want. I mean, there were some 4-0s and 4-1s. But even the 4-0 series, they were nasty.
Yeah,
it was great
stuff. The games
were great.
Yeah, the Tampa Bay Florida series, catch one of those. It's something out of this world. Nashville, that series is the exact same way. Nashville, Carolina, every game is nip and tuck, and it's physical and it's skilled. And you're seeing some goals scored, save for the Islanders Penguins game series. You're seeing a lot of goals. You're seeing 4-3, 5-4 type of games, which is really atypical of playoff hockey. But
to the Islanders and Penguins' credit, I mean, even Jari give up a couple of overtime goals or whatever, but both goalies have been so solid for both those teams, really.
Well, you can't say that about Jari after that disaster that happened.
I know.
You just wonder. Anybody who's played sports, we've all done it. Not on this stage. I don't know how you get over this when you're a pro athlete, but just a complete and utter brain fart. I have no other way to describe what happened to Tristan Jarry in double overtime yesterday. You have the entire behind the net area,
which you always have.
You have players on your team. Chris Letang on one side, Evgeny Malkin on the other, standing all by themselves on the wing. You have 3 Islanders barreling down up the middle of the ice. And what does this jackass do? He clears it up the center of the ice. You'd love to know. What's going through your head there? We've all done these things, you know, at much lower levels, but it's just amazing that a professional goalie could let that happen. Just unbelievable. I could see misplaying. He didn't misplay it. He just rifled it right up the middle.
It was kind of like what you said. It's just a total, you can't even call it a lapse in concentration. It was almost like,
no, because he had an hour and a half to do it. He
it
stood
was like
there and
a
thought
panic
about
attack.
It.
Yeah. It really is what it was. And, I mean, it's not indicative of actually the way he's been playing in net. But that play was enough to, like, God, we got to get rid of this guy.
Yeah. Well, there's already that talk. And I'm not one that typically blames the goalie in every Pittsburgh hockey fan. I'm doing the air quotes thing because there's a lot of fake fans that show up this time of year. Anytime you lose 4-1, 2-1, you know, 3-2, it's the goalie's fault. It's the goalie's fault. They ran Marc-Andre Fleury out of town after a couple Stanley Cups. They ran Matt Murray out of town after a couple Stanley Cups. They don't know any better. But that game, yeah, at least that play, and even the goal before, the tying goal, it wasn't a terrible goal, but if you look back, he was out way above the crease making snow angels. I'm still not – I don't know if he slipped. I ain't sure what happened there. Poor Mr. Jarry had himself a day.
Now, that overtime one, he made an incredible, incredible play on the first move before it turned into that little butterfly second move shot.
The tying goal.
No. The one that actually went in and won the game, his initial move was beautiful. It would have blocked that shot had he actually shot, but when he did the little dip and flip.
Yeah, but he shouldn't have had the puck.
Right, right. But what I'm saying is that first move was was amazing. If he would have just shot, it would have been blocked and they'd still be playing.
They still are playing, but...
No. They'd be in, like, 23rd overtime.
That game would still be going on.
Now, the Islanders goalie, what is it, Sorokin? Is that his name?
Sorokin, yeah.
Conversely with him, did you see the play where the play, you know, the shot came down, and he went down, blocked it. It creamed off of him, went right to Rust.
Okay.
Went right to Rust's stick, right? Wasn't any panic. He wasn't trying to get it. He just slid following that puck, even though it was on Rust's stick. And he just got into solid position and stoned him.
Yeah.
Period.
Calm.
Yeah, exactly. That right there, just the play that you mentioned with Jarry and that one, I mean, just totally different. And Sorokin has, what, basically nothing but AAA experience.
Yeah, I mean, he's only the second game he started in this series. It was just because Varlamov wasn't playing well. And you know, and you see this, right? If goalie catches fire in the Stanley Cup playoffs, there's not much you can do. The Penguins should have won that game about 6-2, in all honesty, with the opportunities they had. He got lucky, and you see that too when a goalie gets hot. Some puck luck, I think it was middle of the first overtime, where that puck got deflected, I think it was off Letang's stick. He was looking the other direction, and it came careening in and just hit him off the skate and rolled away. I mean, just sometimes you get on
that's
that
hot
roll.
Goalie. Yeah. Even you're not looking.
Yeah,
you're
don't even have to, and you're getting it done. If you watch nothing else, go back, get in, and there'll be at least two, probably three more games. Get into that Nashville-Carolina series. That's been a fun one.
If you're not a hockey fan, definitely get into it because I think that'll make you one.
And if you are a hockey fan, here's something you can watch for. I talk about the fake Penguins, the playoff fans that show up who blame the goalie for everything. But by and large, Pittsburgh is a knowledgeable hockey town.
Yeah.
All right. I enjoy watching games in towns like Nashville where they don't have a knowledgeable fan base. And I remember this from when they were in the Stanley Cup Finals a few years ago. And I noticed watching the game, I think it was Saturday night when they were in Nashville. So go back and watch a Penguins-Islanders series. These are two pretty savvy fan bases.
Yeah.
And if a guy takes a good hard check, you'll hear a cheer, something like that. You know, if two guys run into each other, you'll kind of hear nothing. Watch a Nashville game. They know nothing. Every time somebody in the white jersey, in the Nashville jersey, falls down, either on a clean check, on a cheap shot, or if he trips over the blue line, that building explodes. Oh, my God! Boo! 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 They're having more fun than any building in the league, but they have no idea what the hell's going on. I mean, none. Zero idea what's going on, and I enjoy that.
But it fills the stadium with energy.
Absolutely.
Because
they are cheering everything where they should be or not. They're losing their mind, and there's just a buzz in that arena that says, what just happened? And I like that.
But even though some of these, most of these series aren't completed yet, I have come to a conclusion right in the first round. Frickin' Boston's scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they are playing.
How they finished fourth in that division? I didn't understand that. That team is so good.
They are. And I think it gets to the point where you get to the playoffs.
Or, I'm sorry, third in that division, not fourth.
Yeah, they were third. You're right.
They had that COVID incident. They kind of put them back a couple games, and they had to scramble to get games in. So
yeah, maybe that was it.
They started resting people, too.
But they get into a, and I could call it a rut, but they force the opponent to play their brand of hockey, and when you start doing that, you're not going to win very often.
Yeah, then Marchand, that jackass, takes over, and God, I can't stand that guy. He's a great hockey player, but I absolutely cannot stand him.
So you have any favorites right now? Who you actually think? I mean, I just kind of mentioned mine in the East, really. I mean, I right now Boston just looks scary.
I mean, in the West, Colorado's been the best team in the league all year, and obviously with that four-game sweep, where wasn't it 50 something? The goal differential in those four games was something.
4-1, 6-3, 5-1, 5-2.
Yes, I mean,
The Blues, no less.
Yeah, St. Louis is a really good team. Yeah. So, didn't do a lot to dissuade me there. If there is somebody, I guess the Western Conference doesn't matter as much this year. I still don't understand the whole playoff format. I wouldn't discount Vegas.
You got either
a veteran goalie playing well. That team can score any time from any place. And really in the East, to me, it's all about Boston. I really do think it's there. And I have a hard – I shouldn't say I have a hard time. Anybody could beat anybody any given
Tampa,
night.
Tampa, of course, is always scary.
I guess I can't say, you know, the year after they finally win the Stanley Cup, that I'd never be surprised if they got swept out either. But, yeah, it's hard to see anybody beating Colorado, though. And, I mean, they've done nothing to dissuade that so far.
So you're calling it Colorado-Boston.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I can't hardly argue with
that. Sounds
kind
of boring.
Right,
yeah, I'm not sure. It's not the most exciting hockey between the two of them.
No, but that's some of their most real hockey.
Yeah.
You know, that you're going to find.
Yeah, that's true. You know what is boring, Rick? I just do this to troll you. We don't have to spend a lot of time on it. So speaking of how exciting the NHL playoffs, I'm sure the NFL playoffs will be exciting too once we get there. But saw this was last week, so obviously these numbers will be different. So if any of the stat geeks want to attack us, I acknowledge this is about 5 or 6 days old. As we sat at that time last week in Major League Baseball,
right,
the league batting average. average.
Say that again.
The league batting average. Rick, do you want to take a guess on what the league batting average is?
I can't even imagine, but it can't be much more than, what, 230? I don't know.
You're right on it. 236, worst of all time at this point in a season.
And the pitching isn't that great neither.
Well, it must be. There's been 7 no-hitters this year. Remember when a no-hitter used to be special? You remember that? Now it's like commonplace. 24% strikeout rate. 24 out of every 100 at-bats. That's how percentages work, in case you didn't know that.
I got a degree.
Has resulted in a strikeout. On average, 7.8. So let's call it 8. On average, 8 hits per game. The worst since 1908. What? Good God, how can anybody still watch this?
I didn't watch it when they were hitting 60 home runs. I mean, I'm sorry.
See, that I would watch.
It's just, no. It should be balanced. And baseball is never balanced.
Baseball been very, very good to me.
No, it hasn't.
No, it really hasn't. Not recently, anyhow. Not since about 1993.
And you hear me talk about some of these pitchers, you know, the Koufaxes and the Gibson. They have, you know, they had some of these magnificent aces back then, but you also had your Jerry Kuzmans that were 11 and 17, or your Luke Walkers who were 15 and 16 and so forth. And you had 350 hitters and you had 240 hitters and 48 home runs and 10 home runs. Now it's they bat 300 or they bat 111.
The amount of guys under 200 this year, and you'd have to have a lot to have a league average of 236. You got to have a ton of guys under that Mendoza line. They're going to have to move that to .075 for it to even be.
To call it the COVID line,
Pittsburgh,
maybe
Pittsburgh Pirates line from the Gregory Polanco line from everything I'm seeing. How do they get out of this? Analytics has taken over. They've determined this is how you win baseball games. Is there anything MLB can do?
Who wins the games? It's still just the Yankees, the Dodgers.
Weird part.
It's always the same teams anyway.
Yeah, you have that. I don't know how they come back. Every year I say, and I get on you, I want to get back into it. And remember, I got all wrapped up, and remember how great the Washington-Houston World Series was. What a great series that was. You got great pitching, but you got timely hitting. You had a little bit of everything. But, man, every year it just gets further and further away to where it's a home run derby. That's all it really is. You're not manufacturing any runs. The pitchers have such an advantage. You know, if this is 10 years ago and we had 7 no-hitters, that'd be kind of like a cool story. Wow, it's one of those weird blips. I don't think it's that anymore. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, it's still hard to 27 up, 27 down. But nobody's trying to hit the ball, so is it really that impressive?
Everybody's batting .230.
Right.
I mean, your odds go up.
Way up. Yeah, I'm not a statistician, but I think odds go up.
You do know how percentages work.
Indeed, as I taught you today. You can take that to work with you tomorrow. You're welcome.
I don't know. I am just really baffled at it's some of the defense of this, you know, by the so-called pundits and announcers and whatever, like, you know, that this is just such the most magnificent brand of baseball they ever seen. No, obviously they're getting paid to say this.
Right.
And nobody pays us to say anything that they want us to, so we say what we want.
Yeah, they should pay us, though.
They should say us to say what we want.
After we get that Peabody
Award. You're damn right. Get on that, Alejandro.
Straight cash, homie.
Yeah.
As the great quoth Randy Moss.
Yeah. That'd be a great guest for our Peabody ceremony.
Oh, yeah.
We
can get great guests once we have the Peabody.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe first one will be Randy.
That would be great. I don't know if he would, though. He's kind of busy.
Well, he's got a lot going on.
We have to get him out on the off season.
Well, that'd be fine. We got a Peabody. Why wouldn't he want to be associated with us?
That's true.
But kind of to your point, the analytics crowd, I used to feel like they were just a loud minority. Maybe that's the majority now. Maybe that's these D-bag millennial. Because here's what I don't get. All we hear is, you know, we can't play any defense in football anymore because the D-bag millennials can't, you know, they have to have offense. And we've got to get these games done in 47 minutes, a baseball game, a hockey game. I heard people griping about the length of the PGA Championship, that these rounds are taking too long because the D-bag millennials can't sit still that long and everything has to be done in under 90 minutes. But it's these same D-bag millennials who live for these analytics and defend that are essentially, they've completely ruined Major League Baseball. In my opinion, the analytics is starting to, if not completely ruin basketball. It's ruined the NBA at this point because the same thing, three-pointer or nothing, three-pointer or turnover, three-pointer or turnover.
I'm not sure that's so much analytics as the me factor, too.
Well, but it's not as complicated of analytics. Right. It's threes more than two, and so if you
make some threes, you'll be okay.
But it's dramatically changed the game, and it's about taking over the college game. We talk about all the time how many times I've witnessed, even in high school and certainly in the college game, a guard drives off the wing, gets to the rim clean, rather than throw it down or lay it in, he throws it out to the corner for a 50-50 shot on a three-pointer. Right. So you're getting there. Analytics has drastically changed the NFL. Now, a lot of people may feel for the better, right? But if you're into higher scoring games, I like that balance, but some people are all or nothing. It's just this is pervasive, and we're going to have more and more information as time goes on, and technologically more and better ways to analyze that data. I don't see this ever ending, and God, you start to wonder, can baseball recover from this?
I don't think so quite. I mean, in my mind, obviously, no, because it's a horrible product right now. It's
right.
Until they reach some sort of parity in baseball, the league basically is just out there to make some money. You've got, and we go through these damn teams all the time. It's the Yankees, it's the Dodgers, St. Louis, you know, Boston, and there's always a few other ones that tend to rise up,
right,
you know, year in and year out. But it's those teams that are always the favorites going in, and it's always going to be them until something else changes, because when whoever, Milwaukee, gets X amount of dollars from the profit sharing and so forth, revenue sharing, and the Dodgers get X squared amount.
Right.
Well, what's that tell you? Who's going to have the bigger payroll?
Yeah, and that's the first thing that has to happen. They have to get a salary cap in there. They do. You got to give them credit, bully for the players. They have probably the only strong union amongst professional athletes. You got to get that done. You got to get some parity. But something has to be done to change the game. And here's what I'm torn on, right? You know, you go back to what was Bob Gibson's year where they actually had to lower the mound, 60.
It was like 67, 68, yeah. Something like that.
You're going to almost have to have a move like that as well, right? Where do you move the mound back? Do you shorten the ballparks? You're going to have to trick the game up to get balls back in play or to do something. And then I'm going to bitch about that, right? That you're tricking the game up. They might have just lost me.
You can't move the pitcher back.
I think you could.
No, I mean, no, you really cannot.
You
really
just get a backhoe. You can just move it back a
little bit.
It wouldn't be that hard.
Number one, you can't even get 5 innings out of a guy now from 90 feet. What are you going to get? 40 pitches from 110 feet now?
Well, 60 feet, 6 inches.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. 60 feet, 6 inches. So you put him at what, 70 feet?
Yeah, maybe 62. Nice round number.
But why not 62.6?
Well, you could do that, too, if you like that 6 inches.
Or 62.8.
He didn't even react.
Nah, he's trying to get us on the Peabody.
Oh, well, yeah.
But the thing,
keep that up.
Another thing that really irritates me about the baseball, well, Rick Fligger had to leave in the third inning because he had tightness in his left arm. You're 25 years old. You're making $15 million. You know, get the trainer to rub it and get your ass back out there. Stand in left field till a ball comes to you. I mean, my God, you're playing baseball.
It's a weird game now.
It's
over. It's a shame.
It is. It's horrible. I'm sorry.
Doesn't feel done. Like, oh, just you're done.
With baseball.
Oh, okay. Well, should we sell some sandwiches here, and then we'll come back and
got a good dead guy story.
All right, and we have to follow up on something from last week too. So,
ooh, I like that.
What's in the box?
So we're going to have a follow up. We're going to hear about another poor, unfortunate soul lost. But right when we get back, Rick is going to finally, once and for all, tell us what was in the box.
We would like to take this opportunity to tell you about our sponsor and friends, The Chop Shop in Butler, Pennsylvania. The Chop Shop is leading the way in the Western Pennsylvania area for good eats. With fresh menus, great specials, in-house made desserts, and the recently added iced tea, lemonade, and milkshake bar, you are sure to find something to fulfill that craving or hankering, and even a little something extra for that sweet tooth. Yep, they even have gluten-free and vegetarian options as well. You know, between Facebook, Google, Yelp, and TripAdvisor, they average 4.7 out of 5, and that's over a 10-year span, so they are consistently killing it. You can check them out on Facebook, but also at chopshopbutler.com, or do yourself a favor and visit them at 108 North Main Street, Butler, Pennsylvania, and tell them Flager and Briggs sent you.
You don't know what I did over the weekend, Rick.
I don't care.
Well, you should care.
Oh, okay.
So I don't often go to grocery stores or any stores. I'm not much for public, and that's for both mine and the public's benefit, to be honest with you. But I find myself in the local grocer, and I, out of the blue, for no reason, bought a bag of tater tots that was looked like about a 10-pound feed sack worth of tater tots. I like tater tots. It was an impulse buy. They had them. They were smart. They had them right on that, what do they call it, the end cap. And I bought that. So I thought, you know, I haven't had the opportunity. I was out of town most of the weekend. Hadn't had a chance to get to the chop shop. All I talk about for the last month is that poutine. I thought, how hard can it be? I got a 10-gallon sack of tater tots. I'm going to make my own poutine.
All right.
Don't make your own poutine. Go to the chop shop. It is no bueno.
Just didn't work, huh?
No bueno poutine. It's just simple as that. So get yourself down to the chop shop and have them make it. And they'll even put some pot roast on there. I didn't know. How do you just make enough pot roast to put on your poutine? You know what I mean? So
why don't you just make a pot roast, cut off enough to put on your poutine, and then eat your poutine with the pot roast? The rest of it.
That would have been a good idea.
Yeah.
But it seems like overkill. You're eating pot roast and you have pot roast on your side dish.
Well, yeah, bacon explosion. We were talking about that earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Bacon, more meat is always good.
That's true. But right. Just go to the chop shop. Have Billiam hook you up with some poutine. It'll be much better than anything I came up
with.
Well,
that's true.
We have a slight snag for a Peabody.
Uh-oh. What's wrong?
There's an entry fee.
Ooh.
$450 specifically for podcasts.
I would think one of our generous sponsors would love to foot
indeed
that bill,
or a listener.
Yeah, any listener out there?
Who is that guy with the NCAA bracket? Maybe he'd like to make amends and nominate
him. I mean, he's already donated $100, so
yeah. So that's true.
We're well on our way. We're on our way there.
We will start a fundraising effort here. What's that email?
Another GoFundMe
again?
Page.
Well, yeah, we're apparently not allowed to have one of those.
Well, not for what he put down, but maybe for Peabody entry. Ooh.
Could we get a GoFundMe to raise money for our Peabody entrance?
Maybe. Get on it.
On it.
Now, let me give you an unfortunate story.
Oh,
Rick.
Yeah. I'm sure it's sad.
It is. It's horrible. A 40-year-old man. That's a young man, as you well know.
Yes,
since you're past that.
Younger than I.
Yeah.
Not even in his prime yet.
No, he hasn't even got there.
Gross.
A 40-year-old man was found dead inside the leg of a decorative papier-mâché dinosaur statue.
Wait. Say that sentence again.
A 40-year-old man was found dead inside. Quit making me laugh. Inside the leg of a decorative papier-mâché dinosaur statue in Spain after being reported missing by his family just a few hours earlier.
They never thought to look in the statue, I guess.
Well, who would look in the leg of a dinosaur for a guy?
I wouldn't. I've never seen
it. The man, who has not yet been named, was found dead by a father and son in Santa Coloma de Gramenet, a Barcelona suburb, at around 12 p.m., this is noon on a Saturday, according to local news site El Mirall.
Ah, that's where I take most of my news.
Well, yeah. After being informed by the father that a man appeared to be dead inside the dinosaur statue, three units of General Letat Fire Brigade arrived at the
Excellent
scene.
Excellent fire brigade. One of the best in Spain.
Yeah,
I
no doubt.
Say, top three, right?
Easily,
yeah, especially
easily.
Barcelona.
Yeah. That's
Several
Barcelona.
Members of the firefighter special rescue team were also deployed as they had to saw off multiple parts of the dinosaur in order to extract the body from the decorative statue.
Wait, didn't you say it was papier-mâché?
Yeah.
And they just hack it open?
How'd he get in?
Well, does the story not say that?
Well, that's what I'm waiting on here.
Oh, all right. So this is breaking news anytime it feels like breaking. Go ahead.
Yeah. Footage posted to Twitter by El Mirall showed the extent of extraction of the extraction process as the sound of a saw can be heard while firefighters in an ambulance are present at the scene. The police have ruled out the possibility of the deceased man being homeless, as he was reported missing by his family just a few hours before his body discovered, after he had been away from them for 2 days, according to another one of your favorites, El Periodico.
Oh, El Periodico, yeah. Yeah. That's where you get the more salacious stuff.
The Mossos do Esquadra, the local police department, currently investigating the incident, but told La Vanguardia. And that's my favorite. Yeah,
that's a rag. You don't want
to. Oh, come on now.
Nah, that's
they get it right from the horse's mouth. They talk to the police.
more
Mossos dos Escadra.
More like the horse's ass. Okay. You know, when you talk about that.
But there
rag.
Are no indication of criminality in relation to his death. The department also told ARA, that it was believed the man crawled inside the dinosaur statue after he dropped his phone into it before getting stuck when he fell upside down. Police are awaiting results of an autopsy to determine the cause of death and had to work out how he was able to enter the decorative statue. The dinosaur was the last remaining advertising figure in the area, which was created alongside several other decorative figures to promote a now-closed movie theater.
Again, with all of these stories, there's way more questions than answers. Number one.
Squeaky chair. We need some WD-40.
Yeah. I actually thought there was some in the studio here. Maybe it got moved, but yeah.
Well, we'll have to call Mitch, the janitor.
Well, yeah. He's a little shady. I don't like him in here.
Why don't you like him?
I think he smokes the weeds. I worry about that.
But, you know, I mean, the place is always fairly clean. I mean,
fairly clean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know.
I just I have some feedback for him, but I think he's on the tweed, so I don't want to mess with that stuff.
You know, that was the same time. Or the same type of reaction you had with Frank. Remember Frank?
Frank was a lunatic.
You did not like Frank.
Frank was a lunatic.
Yeah. He scared you to death.
He was angry. He always had a hammer with him. He didn't need a hammer. He just carried around a hammer.
I know.
I like Cole. He was a little softer, you know, clean. Yeah, I like Cole.
Yeah, you tend to like this type better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I forget. What were we talking about? Oh, more questions than answers.
Yeah.
We should, for the Christmas episode, we should have a callback to the greatest mysteries in news and try to do a follow-up.
We'll see if we can get any more information. You have to check my periodicals, not that last one, that rag. We're not
reading
that.
As he, you know, pulls up these stories and gets things rolling, we can probably do that.
Yeah. So they can't still figure out. So he managed to drop his phone in there, and they can't figure out how he got in there.
The way I got it figured.
But there's a way he got in there. Why did, rather than cutting it all up and needing 9 police departments and the greatest fire brigade in Barcelona, why didn't they just pull him out from whence he came in?
Well, he was down in the leg, apparently.
Yeah.
And probably slid down the neck or something.
Put a lasso
why didn't
down
they
there?
Just, I mean, this could have been the coolest birthday party. This could have been the coolest birthday party ever. Get a bunch of kids together, give them a bat.
Start whacking it with sticks.
And it's like a giant pinata and see what falls out.
This dude down here is taking a picture with his iPhone.
Maybe with the dead guy's iPhone. Who knows?
And found it.
He was only in there for 2 days. You really die after 2 days?
Well, if you're upside down at a dinosaur leg, maybe.
I guess.
Obviously, you can.
Well, yeah, I guess that's been proven, yes.
There's a term for when you perish via being upside down and all the blood running or rushing to your head.
Suffocation?
No.
No breathing. Don't give up.
I'll work on that.
How about upside down in a dinosaur leg? Is there something different about that?
Stegodeathosaurus?
I like it.
I like it. It could be.
So we got a follow-up, Rick.
Are we done?
That's what we do here. No.
Okay.
We got one follow-up.
You got another dead guy?
No. No dead guy. Well, no, not dead guy.
Okay.
All right. So last week, we were having a deep, rooted in science conversation about the possibility of alien life.
Right.
If you recall.
I
it was very,
recall.
I mean, right down NASA will be reaching out to us for information. But as sometimes happens, it's rare, but as sometimes happens on this show, we got a little distracted, a little off track. But I recall that each of you mentioned you have seen UFOs.
Right.
And I never got the story to any of that. So okay. I got to, because I assume you were drunk or on the weeds or whatever it is you two do, the mushrooms, the magic mushrooms, as the kids say. So I've got to hear about both of your individual alien experiences.
Mine was very simple. I was going to work.
What was the year?
I believe must have been about 85.
The cocaine 80s, as you called them.
I was going to work perfectly sober. Mm-hmm. I worked afternoon shift at the time.
Plenty of time to sleep it off.
And I was going to work, and it was one of those things where you're just driving, and I mean, it was kind of a cloudy day, but it was still obviously still light. And I saw, you know, a light in the sky. It didn't look like it was close, but, you know, I saw a light in the sky. And it seemed rather bright for that time of day. And I was just driving. It was actually on 168, you know, heading towards Newcastle.
Okay. It's got I'm familiar.
Pretty long straightaways in it, you know, so you're just driving, you're looking. And then I noticed it was moving. So I'm thinking, oh, that's a weird-looking plane or whatever. I didn't really think much about it, obviously. But I was driving, but then I looked at it again, and it was moving a little faster. And then all of a sudden, as I'm driving, this thing elongated. It was green. It, like, elongated the light, you know, the light part of it elongated, I don't know how long, but, I mean, because it was a long distance away. But like a cigar. I mean, and then all of a sudden, bam, gone. Just like that.
Where'd it go?
Ollie Honder, help me, please.
ET phone home.
What does gone mean?
It went away.
Well, how does it just disappear? Now you're talking magic. You're not talking UFOs.
No, I'm talking fast. Gone. Period.
Oh, so you saw it shoot off?
Out of sight. Or gone. Boom. Gone. Done. Disappeared. Gone.
Now, is it
done.
Possible?
Gone.
So let me let's go back through the facts of this story again. And
Please. Just
try to find more palatable explanations. So you're driving to work.
Yeah.
High on cocaine.
No, no, no. Perfectly sober.
He's driving that train.
Yes. So you're on a long straightaway. It's the middle
of
the afternoon.
You better watch your speed.
You're on a long straightaway. It's the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah, probably about 3.
In the distance, you see a bright light.
Yeah.
You're moving on this straight stretch, I assume, 50, 55,
probably
60
50,
miles
something like
an
that,
hour.
Yeah.
Is it perhaps you saw the sun as a bright light, and you were the one moving, and it actually never moved?
The sun turned green. And
yeah. Well, that's where my explanation falls apart, the green thing. But I can attribute that to the nose candy.
I was not
copious
number one,
amounts
I was perfectly
mushrooms.
Sober. I was not driving into the sun. Since you're familiar, Newcastle was south.
Maybe. It's west of here. Of this studio,
not
so that's why I was thinking it was there.
No, I wasn't here. I live in a different town east of here. I mean, west of here.
I thought your town was north of here.
It is, northwest.
Yeah, pick one.
If
we had to pick one, it's north.
It's a direction.
No.
Northwest.
North is a direction.
North by northwest.
Yeah, you ever see that movie?
I have.
What do you think?
Well, you talk about some of these other stupid movies you've seen.
I do like stupid movies.
Well, this is a great movie.
I doubt it.
Alejandro, was it a great movie?
It's pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that you kind of shot yourself down for that one. I watch stupid movies.
That's what I like.
But why do you like stupid things?
Because I don't want to have to think.
You don't
like
have
my
to think.
Emotions toyed with. I like to unhinge my jaw, guffaw, look at some hot chicks,
no,
and move
what
on.
What movie can actually toy with your emotions?
I don't know.
I mean,
I
know
watch any
you.
Of them.
You have none. You have the same emotions I do. You're either
quit trying to drag me into your vortex.
No,
of stuff.
You're either angry.
That's one of them.
Or you are
hungry. Is that an emotion?
Hungry. Well, that's not really an emotion. But you're angry because you're hungry.
True.
Or you're contented because you ate.
Right.
And in extreme cases, you may be sad if somebody...
Well, see, I don't want to be sad.
But what if it's not a sad movie?
Well, it could still make me sad.
How?
I don't know. I'm not watching it.
If it's
how
a happy movie, how can you be sad?
So you're saying this North by whatever he said is a happy movie?
I didn't say that. I'm
See,
just asking
you're
a question.
You're a damned liar.
I'm asking you a question.
Here's what I know. Friday always makes me happy. Varsity Blues, always happy. That's pretty much the list. How High, always happy.
Did you finish Big Lebowski yet?
No, I need to go back and find it again.
Did you ever watch Up and Smoke?
Oh, you might like that one.
That would make you happy.
It's been around, like, on the end. I've been logging some time with the Independent Film Channel.
It would make you happy.
What they need to do is get rid of the commercials, because as soon as the commercial
Caddyshack?
Hits. I have seen Caddyshack,
okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, okay.
Makes me laugh.
Well, of course. You ever seen Naked Gun?
One of them the whole way through. I forget which one it was. And then parts of other things have been on cable since I was a kid.
It's like what? Naked Gun, then Naked Gun 22 and a half, then
33 and a third.
Yeah.
Something. Yeah, I don't remember which one it was. It was one of the O.J. Simpson ones.
Well, yeah, he's in those.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, was he in all of them?
I don't know if he was in the last one.
He might not have been in 33 and a third. I can't remember. He was in the first two.
What was the one where, what the hell was his name? The character, the lead character's name? I'm blanking.
You mean the real actor's name?
No, or
Leslie
way.
Nielsen,
yeah.
Frank Drebin?
Frank Drebin, yeah. That's what I was trying to come up with, where it was the love scene, and he puts himself into a full-body condom.
That's the first one,
okay,
yeah.
That made me slap my knee.
You know, one of the first...
As it should.
Yes. One of the greatest scenes to me, it was just kind of like when he's over at Ludwig's place, and he's going to introduce him to Priscilla Presley, you know, because she's going to show him where the records are. And she's at the top of the stairs, and they play that old, like, 50s detective music. And she starts down the stairs, and she takes, like, two steps, and she's real graceful. All of a sudden, blah, 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 the whole way down the damn stairs.
People falling, always funny.
It's hilarious.
Always funny.
It is.
So I don't know what that has to do, how the hell we got there from...
Because you didn't want to be sad.
...driving into the sun...
You didn't want to be sad.
...on your way to afternoon shift high on mushrooms and thinking you saw a UFO.
Wasn't.
So how about you over there, hipster? Let's hear your story.
I wouldn't even tell it on your Honda, because you know what's going to happen? He's going to say you were drunk or this, that, and the other, so you were just
hallucinating. Chances are he was drunk.
That's a good chance.
See? He was drunk.
However...
I did go ghost hunting drunk one time.
Did you find any? Oh,
that could be another good story.
I got a ghost story. But
well, so I'm going to write down ghost stories for next week. Oh, Mariah! Oh, God. I just knocked her over.
So I was...
Are we done yet?
Almost.
Okay.
I was leaving work. Leaving work.
Okay.
Just got done at the salt mine. That's not true. I was actually at the shopping mecca after a long, hard shift of being a security guard.
Oh, so this was recent then?
No, this was my first tour of duty. This was back in like...
Would you like to be a security guard at the Asylum Studios?
Yeah, be great.
We could use one.
I wouldn't let myself in. So I'm leaving work, and...
Then we could hire a competent producer, but we wouldn't have to feel bad about throwing them completely
out.
I like and you could still get beer.
I like where this is going.
So, just picture him standing over in the corner of the studio like this.
Yeah. Yeah, we can get Frank to do that.
I don't want to bring Frank back.
So leaving, going towards the giant eagle.
Okay. That's where I bought all the tater tots, for those of you wondering. It all came full circle.
Look at that. It was like it was planned or something.
Yeah.
And back a ways to the hillside behind it, I noticed blinking lights. I'm like, oh, it's nothing.
It's just cops.
Yeah, it's just the like a radio tower or something like that. And as I'm going, I notice that there's three distinct lights in a triangular pattern. I'm like, well, that's odd. And they start flashing a little bit different. So I stop my car. It's night. Forgot to mention that.
What time of year was this?
I'm
developing a theory in my head.
Like fall-ish. It wasn't cold. So it was like late summer, early fall.
Okay. I think I've solved this already, but please finish your story.
I was going to say the winter beers weren't out yet, so I wasn't like fully tanked.
Pumpkin spice beer.
Yes. So it's like kind of wavering side to side. I'm like, okay, radio towers don't do that. Cell phone towers don't do that. And the lights, there's three red lights, like I said, triangular pattern, blinking oddly. And then all of a sudden there's like a stream of lights from like front red light to back left red light and like going in this triangular pattern. I'm like, what the fudge ripple? So
apologies for the salty language there, but he was clearly affected by this.
Obviously it's not as good as black raspberry. Fudge ripple is just not that great of a flavor.
I don't love it. I mean, it's not awful, but it's just,
that's why I referenced it.
Blah.
So I get out my cell phone. I call my buddy who is big into conspiracy theories.
Oh, yeah, let's call that guy. He'll be a rational voice in all this.
Of course he will. Well, can we get him on the show and we can go looking for aliens or ghosts or something?
No, that's a good point. So you have a wacko conspiracy theorist friend?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got to get him on the air.
So I call him. I'm like, hey.
Is he sensitive? Because I'm going to insult him.
No.
Okay.
No, but he might skin you upside down.
Well, I don't want him in studio.
Okay.
We haven't hired security yet.
So yeah, we don't trust you.
And I'm going to insult
him. I call him and I'm like, this is going to sound weird, but this is what I'm seeing. And he's like, wow, that's awesome. I'm glad you called me. I'm like, well, just in case I go missing, this is what happened to me. And I continue driving, going back to school at that point. And all of a sudden, my lights flicker, my cell phone cuts out, and the triangle disappears.
Now, hold on. So.
Okay. Why don't you ask him what you asked me?
Well, no, I know he was drunk.
Ask him what you asked me.
I forget what I asked.
Where'd it go?
You two got all snitty when I asked that last time, so I guess I can't ask it again. All right, here's what he really saw. The direction he was pointed. So there's the shopping center. There's the grocery store where I bought the tater tots.
Yep.
And then right behind that is the township building.
Correct.
They were working on a salt truck. He saw three lights. They were tail lights. That's what this drunken buffoon saw.
The township building that's below the grocery store.
Right.
And I am above it.
Looking down on it.
No. What? I wasn't looking down on it.
It was reflecting.
You mean looking down on it like as
from his stone high horse? Yeah, it was beneath him. Clearly.
The UFO was below the pavement. I was looking down upon it. Yes.
So let's say I choose to believe this was an aircraft from another galaxy. All right.
Oh, okay, galaxy.
Let's say I choose to believe that. I'm going to choose to believe that. I have chosen. But the next leap you're asking me to thank you. The next leap you're asking me to take is apparently it was just spinning around, hanging out behind the Clearview Mall because it was lacking in power. And fortunately, then you got in your whatever hoopty of a vehicle you were driving at that time. It essentially zapped the power out of your vehicle so it could poof, zoom away and get back to their other galaxy.
Actually, now that he says that, that makes a lot more sense than what I was thinking.
They were probably looking for specials at the mall.
Yeah, it's got.
They were in Spencer's buying.
Could have been.
Buying
Miley Cyrus t-shirts and sex toys.
Well, you know, like that Heaven's Gate cult where they all killed themselves. They all had the change on their nightstands because when they were going to be picked up by the aliens and the comet, the aliens had vending machines on their spaceship, and yet they had
to
have.
Didn't know that was part of the story. No, what was in the vending machine?
Well, food for them.
How did they know how much it cost?
Well, look, this guy just knew.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, you know, you just follow this guy because he knows everything. Here's a story before we go.
I thought we were leaving. Are we done with his mushroomed hallucinations?
You didn't believe it anymore, mine, so there you have
it. It was a salt truck.
The PGA of America apologizes to Phil Mickelson and Brooks Koepka for mob of fans at PGA Championship. Why don't you just start shooting yourself in the head when things are finally starting to get good?
Well, that's what they do. You know what? I haven't understood.
Stood.
Yeah, I just spit all over that one. Have not understood. I'm not even sure if that's correct grammar. That narrative was around all day yesterday and even a little bit Sunday night about kind of how out of control that crowd was, the way Brooks was bitching about it. I'm thinking back to Tiger at Augusta in 19 and in any kind of major exciting event. I feel like, now maybe there was things obviously I didn't see, but as it looked on TV, it looked like what happens when a big time star, Tiger or Phil, is about to win a major. It didn't look that out of the ordinary to me, but there must be something I didn't see.
No, you know what it is? It's 2021, Rick.
Yeah, that could be.
I mean, look, next week I'm going to bring I'll pull it up. An old film of some U.S. Open or something of Arnie's Army. And look, I mean, this
Did they ever fight Franco's Italian Army?
No.
That would have been a good fight.
That would have. I'd like to see that.
But they'd all been on the same team anyway.
We can probably.
But anyway, listen to this statement by PGA of America CEO Seth Waugh. Quoting him,
old Seth.
While we welcome fan engagement, we regret that a moment of high elation and pent-up emotion by spectators in the 18th hole during the conclusion of yesterday's historic PGA Championship briefly overwhelmed security and made two players and their caddies feel vulnerable. Waugh said in a statement on Monday night, "We always put player safety at the top of our list and are grateful that order was restored. I have spoken to both players and apologize on behalf of the association."
Damn it, damn it, damn it, damn it.
That is pathetic.
What happened?
Because that block of wood got a little dinged up knee because he's such a baby, you know. And he doesn't even like another player walking behind him when he's being spoken to. Give me a break. I mean, they're finally starting to be engaged. Seriously, it was a historic major championship.
Right. Oh, yeah.
My God, why does everything have to be spun negatively?
Yeah, it's what they do.
It's not like when they storm the course in Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, now that you could apologize for. But, yeah, that's been around. I don't know if it was just Koepka bitching about it or I don't know. That's weird. All right, let's get out of here.
And just to prove you, as I said last week, now only two of them came out because I was in a hurry. I almost forgot.
Okay.
But this is proof that I paint.
Oh, I forgot about it. Yeah, the artiste. So you painted that?
Yes.
That's pretty good. I'm impressed.
There's only one other one. I had three hanging on the wall. One was messed up. I had my thumb over the thing or whatever. I was in a hurry.
Now I do see the other one. Who knew? Rick Briggs, Renaissance man.
Yes. Vincent Van Gogh.
Would you paint me?
Well, that's easy.
I know where this one's going.
Just paint a square and put a face on. That's not far.
That's not where I thought you were going to go.
But I would never do that on the air.
Oh, why not?
They can't see it.
That's true. Yeah. We could do a show where I sit here and I pose, and you paint me, and we'll do the show.
And I can commentate like Bob Ross.
Yeah. And I can take my pants off. Be kind. That's where you need video, because that was funny right there.
No, that
and
was
I think
not
that
funny.
Is the perfect
that
way
was
to
disgusting
end this show.
And just not a way. Andy Frampton was right. You know, don't bring the children, because this guy is disgusting.
That's hurtful.
Thank you.
I'm making the funny.
Are we getting out of here? Let's go. Yeah.
So thank you so much for joining us here on Chaos and Disorder. We'll be back next week with more fun and more thrills. In the meantime, you can keep up with the show at, I almost said at Asylum Football. That doesn't exist anymore. I was trying to be too perfect. At Chaos and Disorder on Chaos and Disorder on, I give up. It's over. Until next time, we'll see you.
Take care.
I completely melted down there.
Band camp.
Jeez. That's just pathetic.
I don't know.
What is for dinner tonight? It smelled delicious.
I don't know. It doesn't smell bad up there.
I know. It was terrible. I was getting mouth-watering, just like sidetracked the whole time.
Don't say mouth-watering. That's gross.
Why? Because I'm hungry? My God, what is wrong with you?
You gross me out.
Oh, yeah. Like, you're a real Errol Flynn in your underwear.
Wait till you find out when you paint me. Let me be
if
your
that's
canvas.
What I'm painting, I don't need much paint.
That's hurtful. That's
hurtful.
He's just out. I hate when he does this. The outro music's still playing. We're still sticking it up. And he's gone.
I'm done.
Did you watch any more of those Annie biographies? Is it Annie?
Oh, the Ultimate Warrior one.
Did you get to see that one?
Yeah. We got to talk about that next week.
I am going to do my best to watch that one.
Yes, watch it. Excellent.
Well, until then, hasta luego.
Bye, horse.